And now for something purposely positive.
And welcome to Strive to Thrive, the Purposely Positive Podcast. Brought to you by TonyWCoaching.com, where your greatest success is right in front of you. This is Tony Wexler, your host, and on this podcast, we talk about positive issues to bring positive content into the world.
We live in a world filled with uncertainty and skepticism, and it's easy to become disillusioned and lose hope. But what if we could embrace a balanced perspective that acknowledges the challenges while maintaining an unwavering optimism for the future? On today's podcast, my friend Richard and I are going to dive in to an intriguing concept of skeptical optimism, a mindset that combines the power of critical thinking with the unwavering belief in the potential for positive outcomes. Richard, it's great to have you here on the podcast today.
Tony, it's great to talk to you today. We've had some discussions in the past, but this is going to be fun. And I like the way you framed the discussion, Tony.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I think the idea of skeptical optimism really makes someone pause and say, what exactly are you talking about? So let's dig in a little bit. What are your thoughts?
I think the reason for your perception, Tony, is I think in the Western world, at least the world I live in, I think people are completely confused about what is skepticism versus cynicism. Cynicism is that feeling of distrust or something isn't going to work out well. And I think when we in the Western world use skepticism, I think people have that approach to skepticism, which couldn't be farther from the truth. Skeptics are just not satisfied with accepting claims at face value. A word I like to use is credulous. Credulous is a word that describes people who accept anything at face value, who easily believe things. Skepticism is the opposite of credulous.
That's very true. That's a good way to frame it. And I like that. Skepticism has been kind of given a bad rep. It's been meant that we're, like you said, it's been confused with being very cynical in our thinking, and we think everything is bad. Everybody's out to get us. We're
skeptical
guy.
No, I don't believe that. Yeah, that's kind of how people frame it.
But we can actually have that. I don't want to say totally optimistic, but we can believe in that potential for a positive outcome and still be skeptical, because the idea of being skeptical is to find the path that's going to take us to the outcome that we want. And by being skeptical, we actually can screen out those ways that may not work so well for us. Does that make sense?
Well, especially in today's society, in this world we live in, there's so much false information that people believe. And Daniel Ariely has a whole new book on this subject. He was a vicious victim of this false information. He was accused of all kinds of crazy stuff and had to fight it off. So his way of responding to that was to write a book about it and do research, which is what he does. Here's what his discovery is. If we're under stress, existential stress, or we're having challenges in our life, we're looking for excuse. We're looking for answers, somebody to blame, somebody to explain it. In a world of chaos, we don't like that. We want an explanation. So we go down rabbit holes of people who give us those ready explanations. Skepticism is a predisposition, as I said, to not accept things at face value. But really, skeptics are very open-minded. They're just looking to be protected from misinformation. Skeptics are aware of biases and fallacies. Skeptics like to avoid being misled, deceived, or more important, exploited. It's a critical skill in today's world. It's a wonderful skill that people can embrace.
Yeah, it definitely is. We live in a world where there's too much information. We got information coming out our ears right now. I mean, the internet, you log on and everybody has an opinion or a thought about something, and sorting out what is an opinion versus what is an actual fact, that is where the whole idea of skepticism comes in. And when we learn how to use our critical thinking factors and to sort out the realities and the truths from like the myths and things like that, it really helps us to work more toward that positive outcome in life, I think.
Absolutely. I think it's skepticism. It's a strength, absolutely a strength, not a weakness. Skepticism is about robust debate, is about a growth mindset, is about what most I can make out of this. Growth mindset is an important, I think, factor in what you're talking about. You can't grow without some self-awareness. There are a lot of people that you've met and I have met in a room that just don't seem to be self-aware.
True.
They're just not aware of what the heck they're doing. The skeptic is not just skeptical about information coming into their head, but they're also self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
They're aware of what their mental flaws are. There's several books. McRaney has written several books on the mental faux pas we make, all the things we fall prey to as just functioning human brains. And the skeptic likes to be aware of those things, not only as far as information coming in from the outside world, but also paying attention to yourself, not falling victim to your own foibles is maybe a good word, but the sort of mental faux pas that we all make.
Yeah, and I see a lot of that, like I said, in the world of social media. There's a meme coming out every
time. A meme
time
for everything.
You turn around. There is. There's a meme for everything. There was one I saw just fairly recently. We're recording this episode. It's actually late February, but it's going to be a little bit later by the time you guys are listening to this. But we just had Lincoln's birthday, and there was a picture of Abraham Lincoln with an electric guitar playing a Strat. And
yeah, using AI probably, yeah.
Yes, yeah, exactly. But the caption was what was funny about it. It said, "So we know this picture is fake because Fender didn't come out with this style of fretboard until at least," and it gave a date on there,
right.
Which is a totally
ignoring the fact that Lincoln was actually playing.
Exactly. You're ignoring the most important fact that Abraham Lincoln was born and died before this guitar was invented. But we see things like that out there. We see all kinds of craziness out there, and it comes where if we don't approach things with skepticism, we fall prey to maybe believing some things that aren't necessarily true. And that's never a good thing, because when we believe something that's not true, it'll determine what actions we take, and our actions will determine where we go in life. So I think that's really important, where skepticism helps, and just recognizing that, not everything we read on the internet is true, for a great example there.
Well, at one point I started a book, and the book's title was Do This, Don't Do That. The idea is, following up with what you're saying about life is short, and the book was about all the Western memes that just simply aren't true. And the context I'm discussing this in now is, life is short. You can go down a lot of rabbit holes in 68 years, which eat up a lot of time. The theme of Do This, Don't Do That is, don't be going down rabbit holes that eat up precious, valuable time. Stay on a course that is productive and brings benefit back into your lap, you know. Skepticism boosts personal responsibility, taking responsibility for the path on your own life. By questioning the world around you, it empowers us to make conscious choices. And people love the word live authentically, but, you know, there you go. Live authentically. And one of the Western memes is, I want to be authentic. I want to find myself. Well, you can go sit on a mountaintop in Arizona for days and weeks and look inward and think you've found yourself, but it's not in there. It is you find or create yourself by moving through the world and moving through the world in a productive way, in a way that keeps bringing benefit back to you. So living authentically is more about the responsibility of being clear-headed and the responsibility of literally responding to the world around you in a way that, for lack of a better word, is authentic and real. That's where authenticity comes from, not falling prey to a bunch of false paths and rabbit holes that take you nowhere and dead ends.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of those out there. I totally agree. And really, being an authentic person is someone who knows themselves and is not easily influenced, I think, from the outside world. And I think there are a lot of people out there that are out there trying to influence us in the decisions that we make. So I think if we recognize that, an example is the old telemarketers. Now, fortunately, in the days of cell phones now, we still get spam on our phones, but it's not the same as when we used to get them at the house. And I always remember there was always some door and window company, and they were trying to sell you new windows, which, you know, okay, fine. It could be a good thing if someone needs new windows. But they would call up and they would say something ridiculous like, do you want to save money on your gas and electric bill, on your heating bill? Of course, the obvious answer is yes. But what they want to do is they want to trigger what was called the yes ladder. And what that was,
keep getting the yeses, keep getting the yeses.
Keep getting the yeses. So eventually when they give you the offer, would you like to buy these windows? Would you like us to send out a rep? You'll say yes. But we have become so desensitized to that. And in a way, this is really what skepticism is about. There was a new book, and forgive me, I forget the author's name, but he talks about the no ladder and how we're better off asking people questions that the no word is the answer, because it helps people protect their autonomy. It protects their own personal responsibility. Yeah, they feel protected that way. So when you ask a question like, hi, is this a bad time to talk? If they say no, then you know it's okay to talk to them. Does that make sense?
Well, it does make sense. Something you said, though, there's a bit of a paradox in what you said earlier. But you said one of the purposes for being self-aware is not to be influenced so much by others. But the paradox to that statement is, back to this thing of authenticity, authentically what you really are is a massive ball of influence from birth onwards. Everything about your head, you know, looking inward for this authenticness is, it's just the opposite. You have been absolutely put together by all the relationship you have, by relatives, by family upbringing, by history, by the things you've absorbed in the media. And that's not a bad thing. It's just the thing. It is what you are. Now, the answer is not to reject that, but to be self-aware. Because as functioning humans, now we're in a position, I think one of the starting places for, you know, self-healing and so on is just simply awareness. And I read all the time, you need to accept yourself as you are. Now, you don't need to accept yourself. There might be some things you don't want to accept, but you need to start by being aware. And that's a difficult process. There's a lady named Tasha Yurick who wrote a book called Insight, 300 pages on how to become self-aware. It's a conscious process. And again, the good skeptic would embrace that because it's a growth mindset. Skeptics, and I think this is something people don't really understand, as we talked about, people thinking skepticism is cynicism. Skeptics have a great intellectual humility. That's a true skeptic, because I'm not sure about who you are or even what I know and how I'm responding. Let's engage in kind of a dance together and see how that plays out.
Yeah. What is interesting about that is self-awareness seems to be what we're looking at. And if we're aware, we have to be aware of the things we know and the things we don't know. And I think it all starts with wanting to find out, for lack of a better word, let's say wanting to find the truth in the things that are around us. What is true and what is not true? And sometimes there's a fine line in between that, in between truth and fiction.
Yeah, and that's another Western meme that I was, you know, I was interested in writing about. The Western world has sort of, the word's not exhausted, sort of lost its desire to seek actual truth. You know, there's this Western meme, my truth is my truth and your truth is your truth. Well, that's just bullshit. Your opinion's your opinion. My opinion is my opinion, but neither of those may be the truth. We've sort of lost this, you know, passion for seeking a truth or the truth or something that rings true between the two of us. There's so many things. I don't know. I'm sort of hesitating. And there's so many, the list goes on and on. So many things in sort of the Western consciousness that really don't play out if you get philosophical and really think deeply about it. What has happened historically is everybody's kind of aware of existentialism and where it came from in the 1800s and some of the philosophers that I'd have to stop and think about. They help promote existentialism. But that's where the birthplace of this idea that my reality is mine and yours is yours and there's nothing in between. We sort of lost, because of the existentialist movement, we sort of lost the passion and desire to argue out and look for the truth. It's just pervasive in Western society. this idea. Don't tell me what to do. How many times you've been on the internet and you try to debate an idea or talk about something, and the answer is, who are you to tell me what to think? Who are you? Well, who do I have to be really to have an opinion that we share? I don't need to be somebody special to have an opinion we can share. Let's just share some ideas.
Well, we see this a lot. Again, we bring up the internet, but we see this a lot on the internet. I try to avoid getting into like discussions on those topics of like religion and politics, you know. And it's
Let's
funny
avoid
because
those.
when we were younger, I mean, I remember being told that those were the taboo topics. And really, when it comes down to it, yeah, because people have their thoughts and their opinions on it, and that's fine. But usually, you by posting a meme on Facebook or LinkedIn, or usually probably a Facebook or Instagram, you're not going to change anybody's mind usually. So once we realize that and say, okay, let's find the common ground that we can discuss, and let's find the things that we can agree on and park the other stuff outside of that discussion, if that makes sense. But when
Well,
we're looking,
it makes sense, except again, the paradox here is in this discussion of skepticism, let's find the things that we can successfully disagree on.
okay, that's a good way to look at it.
Let's find some things that are not so far out of the box that we're going to get emotional, but let's find some things that we can calmly, reasonably disagree on, and let's learn from each other. So there's that shadow of existentialism. Let's not talk about that stuff. Nah, we don't want to talk about that stuff. It takes a, there's so many things that in society, sort of in general, based on the media you listen to and so on, gets embodied in your thinking. That idea of let's only agree, that's one of those things that's sort of in our current media. They're sort of lost. I don't keep wanting to use the lost the lust for seeking the truth. I keep wanting to use that word.
That's an interesting way to phrase it. Yeah, that makes sense because skepticism is really seeking the truth, isn't it? Because you're trying to
Well,
look
it
at,
is.
is this truth or isn't it? Is something that someone is telling me or writing about or what am I reading? Is this actually the truth or is it not? And by being a skeptic, we're seeking the truth. And there's that saying that says the truth sets us free.
I like that
So,
one, Tony, but I use that. And the way I use it is the truth will set you free, but it begins with doubt.
oh, that's brilliant. It begins with doubt. So you don't start out by believing everything. You doubt, and then you learn, and then you find out if it is true. Well, that's even better because now you've learned something. And if, especially if it's something that you want to believe.
Yeah, it's the standard thing in science, is it falsifiable? Is it falsified? Can you prove it wrong? If you can prove it wrong, you can prove it true, or vice versa, the opposite of that. Everybody has had those discussions where somebody says, stop and think about who you are. What are the values and measures and things that you value about yourself that rise to the top for you? I've done that a dozen times, but for some reason on that day I sat and thought, wait a minute. Skepticism rises to the top for me. I enjoy proving Western memes false. I love reading things in the press or in a book. I read it and go, oh, that's how it actually works. I love that. It's a virtue that I just really enjoy. It kind of rises to the top of the list. A good example of that is positive mental attitude. I looked that up. It came a cent half a century ago. It was a reaction against a really, what should I say without getting religious, a really uptight church. Somebody sort of started a movement to kind of counteract that and the negativism of that. And then it over time turned to the California Positive Mental Attitude Movement, which is drenching yourself in positive mental attitudes all the time. But the research and the fact is, being positive all the time is unhealthy. People who are positive all the time make great big mistakes in business and other areas of their life. They don't practice skepticism. And the father of positive psychology, Martin Seligman, I read his first book. This is the father of positive psychology and the president of the AMA forever, or AM, whatever the psychological association is. He talks about using positive attitudes surgically. When you're planning a project, it's useful to be negative, it's useful to be critical and figure things out. Now, you've figured it out, you've made some decisions, You want to get from A to B in 6 months. Now you put on the positivity. Now's the time to be a little delusional, a little bit over the top. Now's the time to employ it surgically. It's time to be positive. You talked about very early in this broadcast about being balanced. That's an example of being balanced. And the skepticism came in when I began to examine the Western meme of positivity all the time.
I talk about that frequently on this podcast because the name, Strive to Thrive, but the Purposely Positive Podcast. The reason that I started the podcast to begin with is to spread more positive content into the world. But just because it's the Purposely Positive Podcast, it means purposely putting out positive information. But that doesn't mean that the world is always going to be a positive place. And some of the topics that we talk about on this podcast aren't necessarily positive. I mean, we've talked about people who have gone through cancer, and there's been a bunch of different episodes about some tragic events and some sad things that have happened. I did one recently on grieving the loss of a loved one. And that's certainly not a positive thing when you lose a loved one, but what is positive is that you can learn to grow and to heal from that. It's taking that positive ending, I guess. And again, that reminds me of another thing that I wanted to bring up is when we read stories, we always want happy endings, don't we? And have you ever watched a movie that didn't have a
Oh,
happy
yeah, a
ending?
couple of times. They're
And
not satisfying, are they?
yeah, we don't get that feeling at the end. I think about, I was a big fan. I don't know if you watched it much, but I used to enjoy the TV show Seinfeld. And it was an interesting show about nothing, but the way that that show ended, it was just like, huh? And a lot of people talk about The Sopranos, also the way that, and it was just an ending that just kind of didn't go anywhere. And we're just like, no, we want these things to be resolved. When we read a good book, we want everything to be resolved in a positive light, don't we? So in a way, we look for that positive or positivism. We look for an optimistic way to deal with life. But by going into it with a skeptical, let's figure this out approach, I think that's what really can open up some doors for us.
You've said several things that are interesting to me all in a row there. That one of the biggest challenges I find, people have all kinds of mechanisms to manage uncertainty and distress. Some of those mechanisms are productive, some of them are not. It's interesting. People don't talk about this. If you've been traumatized, it's automatically assumed you're screwed up for life. But the fact is, some people come out strong out of trauma and handle it resiliently, and others don't. Is it a positive mental attitude that does it? I'm not sure that's true. I like to use the word possibility thinking instead of positive thinking. Your subconscious is very powerful. If you try to tell your subconscious, like in these wild affirmations, I'm this, I'm your subconscious is saying, oh, baloney. No, we're not. But what the subconscious accepts readily is, I think I can do that. I think that's possible. I can see how that's possible. I can see there might be a pathway toward that. That is a more resilient approach to life than trying to delude yourself or pump yourself up or fluff yourself up. Possibility thinking is, I love it because it's so acceptable and so believable. And it's true. It's almost always possible somehow to get where I want to go. And as soon as you think that way, you start thinking, all right, if it's possible, how? If you pump yourself up with positive mental and you just, I'm this, I'm that, I'm that, you don't have that follow-up thought of how do I take responsibility for that? But if you think of possibility thinking, okay, it's positive, but now I've got to. There's another truth that I've researched, visualize your success, visualize your success. Well, the research shows people who only do that are not as successful as you would think. But people who visualize their success and then also visualize the obstacles they have to overcome to get there are quite successful in their visualizations.
That's definitely the secret to good visualizations.
Responsibility is part of the
Yeah.
formula.
And it's funny that you mentioned that because I was just going to say that when we're looking for potential for those positive outcomes, taking responsibility is something that we really need to do. I mean, and we're talking like radical responsibility. Most people aren't willing to take responsibility. And I think that's part of what we see a lot of today. People don't want to be responsible for the fact that they lose their job. Well, maybe I don't have enough marketable skills right now. I need to go out and I need to make those changes so that I can be more marketable. Just because you're a good person and a hard worker doesn't necessarily guarantee you a job. If you have those skills in the workplace that people are willing to pay for, then that's where you're going to grow. But it's all about paying attention to that and taking, again, personal responsibility for yourself and for those actions. So I think you touched on a big thing there. We do need to take that responsibility. But then again, back to the visualization, you know, I think we talked about this in a previous conversation where you get a basketball player who is trying to make shots and they visualize them making the shot perfect every time. But then they go to the court and they don't make it perfectly. Well, what's the difference? What's causing them to not do what they visualized? Well, because they're not visualizing the opponent standing there right in front of them with his hands in the air trying to block that. So what they have to do is, and just like you said, they have to not only visualize the outcome, but visualize those steps that they have to take to get to the outcome and those obstacles that get in the way.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hesitate, but you prompt so many thoughts when you talk, Tony. You talk for a while. I'm like, yes, and. It's such a great subject. We're just talking about, in general, cognition, talking about self-awareness. One of my pet peeves in the educational system is not teaching people about who we are as human animals with a rubbery computer inside of our head. We've learned so much about that in the last 20 to 15 to 5 years. It's kind of a crime not to teach people about how that operates and how that works. That's a subject we could go into forever, Tony. I hate to even delve too far into that. But humans are an excuse to walk around with a brain. We're not fast. We don't have big claws. We don't have a lot of fur. We're not that resilient. We're an excuse to use our brains, and our brains are used in cooperation with other people's brains. We're cooperative creatures, and the knowledge we have gained about how that works is just tremendous. And I would love to see, for instance, in high school or college, focusing on how we work together, how our brains work, and skepticism is part of that, how you accurately steer your way through the world. One of the hardest things that there is to present and talk about is, we talked about how people in stress are always looking for answers or looking for excuses or somebody to blame or a mysterious cause for how did that, where, who caused that, who's at fault. The fact is the world is an absolute chaos. All these conspiracy theories. Nobody is smart enough to create those conspiracies we talk about. You know, the Illuminati or what, all those conspiracies. Human beings are just not that smart to create those successful conspiracies. The world is chaotic. People are doing the best they can. And our job in life is to navigate that chaos. We can do that. There are methods for navigating chaos. Annie Duke is a professional gambler who wrote a book on thinking in bets. Really neat perspective, a professional gambler trying to teach you, you got odds, you got potentials, nothing's certain. But if you learn to play the odds, you're going to be okay. And this is really this is really what we're talking about here, is increasing your odds of success. Being skeptical increases your odds of success. By navigating with your eyes wide open, you have a much higher chance of success than looking for those, is an excuse the right word? I don't know. Looking for those mysterious causes. Something caused it. It's not my fault. Well, who cares if it's your fault or not? It happened. What's your next move?
Yeah, I like that. Skeptical optimism is really about playing the odds.
Yeah, it is.
Learning how to play the odds, learning how to look at what's in front of you and say, okay, this is the situation. What am I going to do about it? What's my next move? And you're going to take your own responsibility. And yeah, maybe you'll do a little bit of that positive thinking in believing that you can do it. I mean, I don't think that that's a bad thing. You know, we need to believe in ourselves. We need to believe that we can do things, unless we're talking about believing something that's completely impossible. Like I can't say, I believe if I jump off a 7-story building, I'm going to fly. That's not going to happen. So we have to be real in our beliefs, but being willing to play the odds and understanding the hand that we're dealt in front of us, talking about from a gambling standpoint, those people who play games like poker and blackjack and everything, they know how to play those odds by knowing what's in their hand and what's been dealt, and especially on a blackjack table, because they can see the other cards that are out there, and they can go in their mind and go, okay, well, if these cards are out there, then that means that these are left, and the chances of my next card being a 7 or above are probably pretty high, so I should stick right now. And basically, that's how they play. I don't mean to get off in that gambling mindset. My
No, it
father.
seems funny to talk about skepticism and gambling and chance in the same conversation. It's just one of the things about accepting reality, though.
Yeah.
I mean, when I read history and I read biographies and stuff, some people are just lucky. Bill Gates is Bill Gates in part because his dad was wealthy. Bill went to an expensive private school. He could get up in middle of the night and get on a mainframe computer when those things didn't exist. He acts, and I don't know, it networked to some big college. I read this. He was extremely lucky, but you also know he worked his ass off and took advantage of it. The reason I tell this story is if you're not Bill Gates, luck can be created. And it's an analogous to this gambling discussion we're having. You can increase your odds greatly by putting yourself in a place where luck can happen to you. I'm an architect, and one of my favorite stories, it might be Alvar Aalto, I'm not sure which Scandinavian architect. He started out by going to a wealthy country club, going there every day and hanging out. He exposed himself to possibility, as a gutsy thing. If it was a big country club, did he have the money to get there? I have no idea how he got in there. And I don't know that kind of detail about the story, but I remember the story that he went in that country club and hung out, gave himself a chance to meet a wealthy client somewhere. He increased his luck, so-called. And so the same thing in life, the world is chaotic. Nobody's exactly in charge. Roll the dice. Is this a skeptical approach to, is this a wishful thinking? Is this a dumb positive mental attitude? I don't think so. I think it's smart to embrace the fact that the world is kind of chaotic and get out there and have the debate, expose yourself not just to possibilities, but other ideas. There's things you don't know, but there's things you don't know. And that will never filter into your head without, again, rolling the dice and getting out and meeting people and being in places and exposing yourself to a lot of stuff. People love to talk about how weird some artists are. Maybe they're weird, maybe they're just smart enough to put themselves out there intellectually and expose themselves to stuff the rest of us don't want to. Maybe they're not weird. Maybe they're smart.
That's true. And I was also thinking people want certainty in the world. I think
Yes.
if you look at the core values that people have, one of those core values is certainty, the need for things to be certain. But the only thing in life, Richard, that's certain is that things are going to change. And once we realize that, it makes things a lot easier. Is that skepticism? Is that optimism? Is that either? I think just it's just reality. It's knowing that things aren't going to be the same in 5 years than they are today. And once we know that, we can approach that, it can make our life a lot easier.
Yeah, I've been an architect 40 plus years and an innovation kind of coach and consultant for 20 or 30 years or something. One of the things that I've observed, people who embrace discomfort get a lot farther down the path. One of the reasons people resist creativity and innovation is they're unwilling to step into the discomfort of it.
Yeah.
One of my favorite books is the title is Doing Things You Hate. The theme of the book is do things you hate just to experience doing things you hate, so that someday you'll do something you hate that matters, but experience
That's
the sensation.
it's going outside your comfort zone. It reminds me of there was a, I think it's Brian Tracy who wrote the book Eat That Frog or Eat the
Oh
Frog.
yeah, I
It
haven't heard
talks
that
about doing
one.
the thing that you don't want to do What
Do
you
it
know you
first.
need to do first thing in the morning because you get
Okay.
it out of the way.
Well, that's a
And
hard one, isn't it?
I that's the hard, that's why they call it eating the frog, because it's something that nobody wants to do, but getting out of your comfort zone. And I think that's a lot of times when I work with my clients and we try to come up with a success plan, they know, they deep down in their heart, everybody knows what they need to do. It's just that they don't want to do it. And they put off the inevitable. You know, I've done some many workshops on procrastination because I'm a member of that club. I have the t-shirt that says Procrastinators Unite Tomorrow.
But
So, but
the
I,
paradox of that, Tony, there's always the
yeah.
yin and yang. The paradox of that is research shows that if you're in a high stress situation, uncertain situation in life, you really can't be very creative and productive. So the paradox is, and this is a self-awareness thing, you need to put yourself in a place where you got a safety net, where you're comfortable, where you know someone's got your back, where you've got to be. One of the popular memes in Western culture is successful people are big risk takers. That's not true. Successful people are calculating in their risk, have backfalls. I read about one guy who has a huge, digital internet company or something. He kept his job forever, even though he's making millions of dollars already. In terms of self-awareness, you've got to take care of yourself. You got to have someone covering your back. You got to have a safety net. You got to feel good to then willfully step into the discomfort zone and willfully go out of that zone and seek new opportunities and new possibilities. So it's not a matter of being a wild risk taker or disregarding your personal needs and some social norms and so on. You have to have both.
There's definitely some truth there. You got to have a little bit of both. And you have to be willing to do the work because most of the time, yes, we hear these stories of these rags to riches stories or where people just all of a sudden walk into something that creates a fortune for them. But for the most part, it takes a lot of hard work. As a musician, I'm a big Beatles fan. I grew up,
Ah,
playing a lot of their music. And
yeah.
if you look at their history, you know, they didn't just show up on the scene in America, go on the Ed Sullivan Show and become this
No.
huge super band. They were playing in these nightclubs and not the nicest
Dives,
nightclubs
dives, yeah.
in Hamburg, Germany, and playing, in like strip clubs for the day. And they were like a band that would play in between when the acts would come on. I mean,
Yeah,
talk about a tough
they weren't the featured
job.
band. Yeah,
Exactly. But they played all these hours and hours and hours, and they put the work in, and they were young at the time. I mean, I think George Harrison at one point, he wasn't even old enough to even be in the bars, and he got sent back to England. But the point is that they didn't just show up as an instant success, as we think they did. They paid their dues, and I think when we want to be a success, I think we have to be willing to take that calculated risk, as you said, and be willing to pay our dues and be willing to do the work along the way. Is it skepticism to say that we're not going to be an automatic success? No, it's actually reality. And in most cases, it's okay. It's good to want to succeed, but we have to be willing to learn what we need to learn in order to succeed in the first place and be a valuable asset to society.
Yeah, and I, since we're talking about skepticism, I sort of like to return it back to I didn't finish my book for two reasons. It's a lot of work. And the second reason, I felt like I needed to have a whole research staff of undergraduates to help finish it. But back to where I started that book, which is to say, and I'm 68 now, I'm telling you, and anybody my age will tell you, life is short. So you look back on it, and the older you get, when you're 40, you're thinking 10 years ahead, no big deal, I'm going to be 50. When you're 68, you're thinking 10 years ahead, you're thinking, oh, the wall's coming. I'll be as healthy as I can, but it's coming. You don't want to go down those rabbit holes. The skepticism is about increasing your odds by being aware, having your eyes open. There's so many ways to be fooled. We're just so susceptible to that. The way our brains think, it's so easy and so natural to be fooled. You're talking about doing the work. We're talking about doing the intellectual work.
Absolutely.
Use what you got. Daniel Kahneman, in his book, do you remember the title? Anyway, Thinking Fast and Slow. Our brain naturally thinks fast. We're survival creatures. We're on the savannah. We're chasing deer. Lions are behind us chasing us. You got to think quick. You got to think quick. You got to react. You got to move. But there's a part of our brain called thinking slow. That takes energy, literally actual physical energy. What is it? The brain uses 20% of the energy of our body, or something like that. And when you think slow, you're using more energy. So that's work. That takes a little decision making. I know when I was young, I had a very close friend who was like a brother, and his dad was quite a thinker. He said, "Boys, thinking is hard work." I
Yeah.
never forgot him saying that. Thinking is hard work. And so skepticism is about doing the hard work of slowing down and giving it some thought.
Absolutely. I think about slowing down and making decisions at the same time. So one of the things that I teach a lot is being able to make decisions quickly, because sometimes we waste a lot of time. And the example that I use is the menu in the restaurant. I said, if you want to learn how to make decisions, I said, the first way to do it is to start exercising those muscles. You go into the restaurant and you open up the menu, and the first thing that looks good to you just pick it. And you don't sit there and hem and haw over, okay,
That's
oh, that
funny.
looks good. Oh, wait,
That's
that looks
funny.
good. Well, because you gotta learn, we have to be better decision makers, but at the same time, we also have to learn to use our critical thinking, which is really what skepticism is all about. Thinking about, is this a good decision or not? And learning how to recognize the good decisions, make those decisions quickly, and move forward will really help to propel us into a more successful life. So, is there anything else that we haven't talked about on this topic that you wanted to bring up, Richard, before we close things out?
Yes, lots.
I'm sure we could probably go on a couple hours.
I won't do that. To finish it up, this discussion is about using the machinery that's in your head. There's so much good information now on that subject. Go get it. People talk about the internet being the fault of all this crazy false information. I find the internet is incredible for finding the truth if you'll do it. If I hear something or somebody who's selling something, I will go on the internet and say, is so and so, I'll say it this way, is so and so full of shit? I'll just stick it on the internet and someone will have an opinion and they will tell you their research methods aren't valid. I've got a friend who's always posting stuff on, did you know, Richard, that this is really the truth? And I'll say, I won't use his name. Give me your source. Just tell me your source. And I'll go look up his source and I see that he cherry-picked it. So the internet is wonderful if you'll use it thoughtfully and dig in. Don't take it at face value. Wonderful tools we have today.
If
Be
we could
skeptical, be thoughtful, don't take it at face value, and dig in.
dig in, yeah, if we had the tools, I can't imagine what life would have been like to have grown up with some of the things that are out there today. I mean, just thinking about the thing that we hold in our hands that we can make phone calls with, which we don't even use very much to make phone calls with, has a computer on it more powerful than the computer that they sent people to the moon with.
Yeah,
It's
that thing
just.
you paid $1,200 for is not a phone.
Yes,
I
exactly.
didn't pay
Exactly.
$1,200 so I could talk to my significant other.
Yeah.
I do that. Of course, I use it for that, but it's a computer.
It really is
You
what we
have
have
AI
today.
on your phone now. You
It's
have
amazing.
AI on your phone. You can ask the most incredible questions and get an answer
Yeah.
on your phone. It's.
And be
I have
skeptical of
like
that
50 or
answer.
I have like 50 or 60 apps on my phone. I use it like a computer.
Yeah,
It's going to do
exactly.
stuff for me.
It's amazing.
So
Well,
dig in.
again, dig in. That's a great way to end it. Dig
Yeah.
in. Don't believe everything, but dig in, and you'll eventually find the truth. And that's the optimistic part of it all, that we will find the truth if we really want to dig deep enough. And
Or at least you'll increase your odds a whole bunch.
and playing the odds again. So if people wanted to reach out to you, Richard, and have a conversation with you about this or anything else, what would be the best way to do that?
Well, I am on LinkedIn. My name is Richard Kilbon, Kielbon, Richard Kilbon. I'm on LinkedIn. And I have a website at rkielbonstudio.pro, Rkielbon studio.pro.
Great.
That's another great place you can find me. But LinkedIn's probably the very best place to go.
LinkedIn's the best place to go, and I'll post that in the podcast notes. And before we close out, I always ask my guests this question, and it's simply this: what does being purposely positive mean to you?
Oh, we've covered that so thoroughly. Dig in.
Yes.
That's what it means.
Dig
Dig in.
in. Everything comes back to dig in. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Richard. This has been a fun conversation, and I've really enjoyed it.
I did too, Tony. We have such a good time. I'm so thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. Thank you so much.
And you've been listening to Strive to Thrive, the Purposely Positive Podcast, brought to you by TonyWCoaching.com, where your greatest success is right in front of you. And you may be out there, you may be wanting to dig into something. I have a free resource. It's a short ebook you can download at TonyWCoaching.com, and it will help you in the direction of a purposely positive life.